So we're continuing our study of Sefer Shmuel Aleph, Perachav Beis, Pasuk Vav. And what had happened in the first couple of psukim in Perachav Beis that we left off with was David's on the run, and he all of a sudden has a following. He was hiding in a cave, and about 400 men, people who needed a leader, people who were on the run, they found him, and his family had come in hiding with him, and then he went to the king of Moab, offered his family that his family should hide by the king of Moab till things get quiet. And then we were told that God Hanavi, one of the prophets named God, came and said, you shouldn't really be here, you should go hide in the land of Yehuda. And we pointed out, the Mefarshim explained, Yehuda's his relatives. He's from the tribe of Yehuda. If any tribe is going to be sympathetic to his plight, it's going to be the tribe of Yehuda. Pasuk Vav brings the scene back to what's happening with Shaul in his palace. Vayishma Shaul. And Shaul heard, Ki noda David va'anashim asher ito. He heard that David and his men are known, right? Va'anashim asher ito. Perchav Beis, Pasuk Vav. So Shaul heard, Ki noda David va'anashim asher ito, that they are known. David, first of all, he has men with him, and this fact that David has men with him was made known to Shaul. V'shaul yoshev v'giva tachas ha'eshel b'rama. Shaul was sitting in Giva underneath a certain type of tree, b'rama in Rama. V'chaniso v'yado, his spear is in his hand. V'chol avadav nitzavim alav, and all of his servants are surrounding him. So when we say that Shaul is Yoshev by Giva, that's usually where we find him. Giva was his hometown. Giva was where he ruled from. When the pasuk says Tachas ha'eshel b'Rama, underneath the eshel tree in Rama, so the strict translation would make it sound like it's almost like he's in two places. On the one hand, he's in Giva. We know Rama is a place. Rama was where Shmuel was from. Mm-hmm. So Rashi quotes a tradition not to understand the phrase Tachas Ha'eshel B'Rama literally, but to understand Tachas, it's almost like under the protection of the tree in Rama, meaning it was the only reason why Shaul was able to still even kind of be in power at this point was a schus that he had, a merit that was coming towards him because of Shmuel. Because of Shmuel, who was always concerned for Shaul, Shmuel who always davened on his behalf, so that kind of allowed him. Now, you have, when you see the end of the pasuk, v'chol avadav nitzavim alav, all of his servants are kind of standing by him. At that moment, when you're the king, and you have all of your servants standing around you, you are quite protected. What do you not have to have in your own hand? A spear, or a weapon. When the pasuk puts a stress v'chaniso biyado, that his spear is in his hand, it's an indication of how afraid he's feeling and how on guard he needs to be feeling, and how that is not rational. It's not rational because we know that no one's trying to get him. David is not trying to get him actively, and we'll see throughout the rest of Sefer Shmuel Aleph, David never tries to hurt. Even when David has opportunity and we could maybe say it's self-defense, David never wants to harm Shaul in the slightest. So it's irrational. But unfortunately, this is a continuation of the irrational thought process of Shaul. V'chaniso biyado, he's sitting there. He's got all of his guards around him. Nothing to worry about, and yet he's clutching onto his spear. Pasuk Zion. Vayomer Shaul la'avadav. Shaul said to his servants, Hanitzavim Alav, that are standing there around him, Shimuna b'nei Yemini. Listen up, Benjaminites. Listen up, those from the tribe of Benjamin. And presumably, it makes it sound like they're all from the tribe of Benjamin. Gam l'kulchem yitain ben Yishai sadu suchramim. Will the ben Yishai, a reference to David, will he also give to all of you fields and vineyards? L'kulchem yasim sari alafim v'sari meos, and to all of you will he place in positions of being the officers of the thousands or the officers of the hundreds? This is the beginning of a line of questions that's rhetorical. What he seems to be already hinting at is, you have two choices. You could have me as king, and remember what tribe I'm from. I'm from your tribe. Or you could have David as king, the Ben Yishai, right? Again, derogatory to not even use his name. Just call him Ben Yishai. We'll see that again in this parak. That to call someone in a not respectful way, you just call them the son of someone as opposed to their own identity. So, right? Will David also give you positions of being officers? Almost saying as I have. I mean, it must. First of all, we see that he must be talking to a whole group of people who are Ishimini. Well, what is that? Is that so proper? Shaul is the king of all 12 tribes. Why should his avadim only be from the tribe of Binyamin? But it seems that for whatever reason, he's implying that there has been some special treatment to the tribe of Binyamin. And now he's appealing to them by saying, and if David's king, is he going to continue to give you special treatment? He'll probably clear the palace, clear the cabinet of Benjaminites. He'll bring in Yehudites. He'll bring in people from the tribe of Yehuda. So is David going to be offering you A, fields and vineyards, and B, positions of power, pasuk ches, ki kshartem kulcham alai, that all of you have rebelled against me? The word kishartem, so a kesher literally means a knot. The Mitzvah Simon here says it's an agudas anashim. It's a bundle of people, all with the common thread, the common theme of causing a rebellion. And it happens to be this word, I don't remember it being used in Sefer Shmuel so far together, but when that we've seen together. But if you look at Sefer Malachim, unfortunately, both in the Malchus Yehuda, in the southern kingdom, and the Malchus Yisrael, the northern kingdom, there were many instances of rebellions that led to toppling over a king. There, almost, I can't say for, I didn't go through all of them, but on most of those occurrences, that this is the phrase that the Tanakh uses, kishartem. Kishartem means a rebellion with the intention of taking down one king and putting in a new king. So is David making you those offers? Ki kshartem kulcham alai, that all of you are rebelling against me. The ein gole'as azni, and you did, and no one, and it was not revealed in my ear. Bichras bini im ben Yishai, when my son made an agreement, enacted an agreement with the son of Yishai. When my son, we know what that's talking about. When Yonatan and David made their peace treaty. The ein chole michem alai, and none of you were almost like sickened for me. The gola es azni, and to reveal to my ear, ki hakim bini es avdi alai, that my son stood up, allowed to raise up against me, la orev kayom azeh, to ambush me on this day. I mean, why is it only after the fact that I'm hearing that Yonatan helped David? Why is it only after the fact I'm here? Where were you? You're my trusted servants. So in the parentheses, we're saying that apparently it has gotten back to the king. Somehow, some way, that whole episode of David being helped by Yonatan, apparently something got out a little bit more. Either that, or you could explain that this is not Shaul speaking out of fact, but it's Shaul speaking out of suspicion. What do we know from the Psukim? From the Psukim, we know that Yonatan said to Shaul, after Shaul recognized that David wasn't there at the meal on Rosh Chodesh the next day, so Shaul said to Yonatan, where's David? And Yonatan says, oh, I let him go to Beis Lechem. So that's what Shaul, that is the fact on the ground. So Shaul might just be referencing to that. That clearly my son allowed David to leave. Why wasn't someone else on top of that? Why wasn't someone else on top of stopping David, of keeping him in the palace? So Shaul is kind of throwing up his hands, and he's looking for some response from his servants, some type of sympathetic response to his feelings that no one, everyone's leaving me in the dark, everyone's rebelling against me. And it could be one or two of them are feeling threatened, or the, you know, they don't know what to expect. You have to imagine. I can't say for sure, but if we are able to pick up from the way the Navi is describing Shaul that he wasn't in a rational, normal state of mind, it could very well be that his servants around him were also able to pick that up as well. But no one seems to be responding. No one's trying to calm him down. We know one for sure is not going to be. Right now, Yonatan is not in any position at this point.
Where is he right now?
For all we know, he's in the palace, meaning he didn't run away. He was never kicked out. We had seen, there was a time earlier where Yonatan was able to calm down Shaul, where Shaul said he wanted to kill David, and Yonatan said, but he's innocent, and Yonatan was even successful in getting Shaul to take a shvua, to take an oath that he won't harm David. But it's kind of like that boat has sailed. Mm-hmm. Yonatan is no longer capable. Obviously, he's physically capable, but Yonatan will not be listened to by Shaul, and therefore he's not stepping up to the plate. But it doesn't appear that anyone is. It doesn't appear that anyone is ready to come forward and calm down Shaul. So it's almost like there's this moment. It almost appears like there's this moment of probably like dead silence going on, and no one's answering, and Shaul's like kind of persisting, and all of a sudden comes Pasuk Tes. Vaya'an Doeg Ha'adomi. And now Doeg Ha'adomi answered back to the king. V'hu nitzav al avdei Shaul. He was nitzav, like literally means standing, but it's a more hinting towards a position of authority, that he was kind of on, he was standing over the servants of Shaul. Vayomar, and Doeg said the following. Ra'iti es ben Yishai. I saw the son of Yishai. Ba Nove. I saw that he came to the city of Nov. He came to Nov. El Achimelech ben Achituv. He came to Achimelech, the son of Achituv, who we know already is the current Kohen Gadol. Pasuk Yud. Vayishal lo ba'ashem. And he, Achimelech, asked for him, meaning the Ben Yishai, Ba'ashem of Hashem. That's one thing. V'tzeda nasan lo, and provisions he, meaning Achimelech and Kohen Gadol, gave to David. V'yascher of Goliath aplishti nasan lo. And Achimelech, the Kohen Gadol, also gave to David the sword of Goliath, the Philistine. Three things that Doeg says he observed. Actually, well, first and foremost, he says that he saw Ben Yishai. He saw David. Now, you could probably ask the question. So maybe what should Shaul's response be? So why didn't you capture him? Why didn't you kill him? Whatever reason, it doesn't seem the Doeg in Shaul's mind, Doeg is coming out as the hero. I don't know. Maybe Shaul had some type of understanding that if David's a hard capture, and so he would be understanding of one individual servant who wasn't able to, quote-unquote, take down David. But this information that he told him, Shaul finds quite valuable. And the Mefarshim are extremely critical of Doeg. It seems that, first of all, Doeg lied. That's A. B, the things that are truthful here, he spins and does not give the full picture at all. Doeg is held accountable for, is definitely held accountable for his actions. Why would Doeg be speaking? It makes sense that he's speaking up because this is going to propel him even higher. This is going to raise his stature in Shaul, right? He's, right, all the servants are standing around. No one is stepping up to defend the honor of Shaul. All of a sudden, one has information about David that could lead it further and at least show where does his allegiance lie. His allegiance lies with Shaul. So Doeg clearly had ulterior motives. The first part of his statement, he says, I saw David in Nov coming to Achimelech the Kohen Gadol. When it says, Vayishalo ba'Hashem, asking of Hashem, most probably means a reference to the Urim V'Tumim, to using the Kohen Gadol to communicate to Hashem. David did not ask Achimelech to do that. And it's from the Pesachim, it doesn't appear that Achimelech did that. Mm-hmm. But that's perhaps the most offensive to Shaul's mind. Because only a king can ask the Kohen Gadol to converse. It's not, you know, it's the Urim V'Tumim was not something that anyone could go over to the Kohen Gadol and say, hey, Kohen Gadol, you know, I don't know if I should become a doctor or a lawyer. What should I become? I don't know if I should go here on a business trip or go there. Which way? I don't know if I should marry this. It's not for a regular person. It's specifically for national concerns. Who represents national concerns? The king. So all of a sudden, you have Shaul listening, saying that the person who he thinks is after his own job just went to the current Kohen Gadol, and the current Kohen Gadol, on his behalf, went ahead and communicated with Hashem, you know, ain treason gadol mizu. There's no act of rebellion and treason greater than that. But that wasn't true. Then in the second two things he says, Vitseida nasan lo, ve'escher of galias haplishti nasan lo, that Achimelech gave David food and gave him a sword, that's true. But it's not the whole story. First of all, even if Doeg was not able to hear the conversation, we saw from the Psukim, Achimelech is rather hesitant. Number one, they were afraid to see David coming alone. That's a feeling that's palpable. So even if he couldn't hear the conversation, he could, and Achimelech wasn't like, David didn't say, give me food, and he immediately went. There was a whole back and forth. He said, I only have holy food, and are your men pure? It was a whole back. So Shaul is being given a story here by Doeg that's really missing a lot of the context of the story. And in a vacuum, if you're Shaul and you hear the story the way Doeg is saying it, what is your opinion now of Achimelech? That Achimelech is aiding and abetting my enemy. So a friend of my enemy is my enemy. So Achimelech is now Achimelech, the sitting Kohen Gadol, who is obviously in charge of this city, Novi Arkohanim, where the current Mishkan is functioning. He's now clearly on the other side. Pasuk Yud Aleph. So the king, meaning Shaul, called. He sent messengers to call to invite Achimelech ben Achitov haKohen. Achimelech the son of Achitov haKohen, meaning the Kohen, the Kohen Gadol. V'as kol beis aviv haKohanim asher benov, and to bring all of his father's household, the other Kohanim, who were in the city of Nov, v'yavu kulam el haMelech. So all of the Kohanim come to the king.
Is that unusual?
It has never happened before. Right, so we only have 2 years of, approximately 2 years of having a Jewish king. But as far as we've seen, the Kohen Gadol has never been summoned to the king's palace. We did see Shaul on the battlefield and having a potential. There was a time where he called over the Kohen Gadol. He asked, but then he actually stopped. He went to war without asking. So there definitely is precedent for the Kohen Gadol coming to war, and the king having the ability to ask of the Kohen Gadol to converse with Hashem via means of the Urim V'Tumim. But this is being summoned to the palace. This is a first. Pasuk Yud Beis. So they all come. Pasuk Yud Beis. Vayomer Shaul. Shaul said, Shemana ben Achituv. Listen now, son of Achituv. Vayomer, hineni Adoni. Vayomer. So Achimelech, the Kohen Gadol, says, here I am, Adoni, my master. So we have Shaul speaking in a very demeaning way to the Kohen Gadol. First of all, saying, Shemana, and Ben Achituv, not even calling him his name. Now, he's a melech. He doesn't have to give honor to anyone, because he doesn't have to, but there's the right thing, right? You would want that the Kohen Gadol gives proper respect to the king, which he does. He still calls him Adoni. And you would want that the king gives proper respect to the Kohen Gadol. They're separate entities. One is in charge of physical leadership. One is, I don't know if you want to say in charge because they still had a Navi, but one plays a major role in the spiritual leadership of the people. So he's already you already sense that Shaul is going at this in a very attacking manner.
It's like saying Benisha.
Exactly. So he's equating them. He's basically saying I'm not going to give them the respect they deserve to have their own name be used. They're just you're insignificant. You're just the son of so and so. Pasuk Yud Gimel. Vayomer Elav Shaul. So Shaul said to Achimelech, the Kohen Gadol, Lama kishartem alai. Why are you rebelling against me? That word kishartem again. Lama kishartem alai. Why are you rebelling against me? Atu ben Yishai. You and Ben Yishai. You and the son of Yishai together. B'sitcha l'lechem. When you gave him, or through you giving him bread, the cherev, and giving him a sword, v'shalo belohim, belokim, and asking on his behalf of God, lakum elai, right? All the help was lakum elai, so he could rise against me, la'oriv to ambush me kayom hazeh, as clear as day. When you call someone into your court, and you want to understand, if you want to understand what really happens, and you're not just talking to anyone, but you're talking to the Kohen Gadol, you would most likely expect a certain level of respect and decency to allow the Kohen Gadol to say his piece, maybe even before even accusing him of something. Something you could say, something parif. I heard David was in your midst. Can you explain? That's a very non-attacking. You wouldn't even call it, that's not even an accusation. You're looking for information. Shaul doesn't do that. Shaul immediately responds with an attacking question. Lama. What happens to be, I've heard this from mental health professionals. Whenever you're interacting with a person, why is always an attacking question. When you say why did you immediately are putting that person on the defensive, and you're probably not going to get the best response back about the matter, because the person is going to be focused on defending themselves. As opposed to if you would have maybe said what or how or other ways of getting to the same exact idea of what you're trying to get to. If your intention is, you know, truth. If your intention is to attack, why is a great question. Lamak shartim elai. Why are you rebelling against me? With David. All of a sudden, and now, it's a lot of times we don't read the psukim too quickly, but even us, when we're reading, we're always, for like 1 second, take a pause and put yourself in Achimelech's shoes. You know absolutely nothing Perhaps you know absolutely nothing about Shaul and David. David comes to you alone and asks for food. You're suspect. So why would David be alone without an entourage? He's the king's son-in-law. And he says, oh, I'm on a secret mission from the king. That sounds normal. You go ahead and give him food. You go ahead and give him a weapon. And you go on to keep on bringing karbanos. You're minding your own business. Sometime later, messengers arrive. Say, Shaul wants to see you. You and all the kohanim. At that point, you're not thinking anything's up. So you come. You come to the palace. Maybe he wants to have a dinner in my honor. Who knows? He comes. The first thing out of Shaul's mouth is, why are you rebelling against me? So now all of a sudden, Achimelech is on, he's automatically on the defensive. Pasuk Yadalad. Vayan Achimelech es Hamelech Vayomar. Achimelech, the Kohen Gadol, answers back to the king and he says as follows. Umi b'chol avadecha k'David ne'eman. Who among all your servants is as trustworthy as David? V'chasan HaMelech, and he's the king's son-in-law. V'sar el mishmatecha v'nechba v'veisecha. He's someone who always listens to you and he's honored in your household, right? David is one of the most praised officers of the day, right? We just had, when David ran away to the Plishtim, we heard again that quote people said. People used to say how Shaul kills the thousands, David kills the 10,000s. David, to the rest of the country, David is your trusted soldier. Whenever you want to fight the Plishtim, who do you send? David. Who'd you marry your daughter off to? David. So you're accusing me of doing something with David. I didn't even know that David is against you. David, as far as I know, David's your most trusted advisor. Pasuk Tesvav. Hayom hachilosi lish'olo velokim. Did I begin today asking on his behalf of Hashem? Chalilali. Definitely not. Which is either kind of either understood one of two ways. Either he had already asked things of Hashem on behalf of David, because all of those times it was David being sent as a messenger of his father-in-law, the king. Meaning, I didn't start today. Today's not the first day that David asked me to ask things of Hashem. That could be one way to explain it. The other way is, I didn't start today because it didn't happen. I didn't. Al yasem hamelech ba'avdo davar b'chol beis avi. Please, do not place, king, do not place, the king should not place his servant, meaning me, any matter against my father's household. Ki lo yada avdecha b'chol zos davar katano gadol. Because your servant, meaning me, the Kohen Gadol, he's referring to himself as in a very modest way, that he's the servant of Shaul. I didn't know anything about this matter, Davar Katan, Davar Gadol. I don't know David. I didn't know David is your enemy. I didn't know I was aiding and abetting a fugitive of the king. I knew nothing. I was totally in the unknown. I didn't see anybody talk about this. The one thing that Achimelech doesn't do, he doesn't appear to actually apologize.
Well, he didn't do anything wrong.
Correct. He didn't do anything wrong. He's accused, and he defends himself. But sometimes, even when you're accused, it's better to defend yourself in an apologetic type of way. From the words of the Pesukim, and just my take, it doesn't seem like he's apologizing. He seems to be properly defending himself, which he's clearly entitled to do, to properly defend himself. But when you have an irrational individual who's accusing you of something, it just might not be enough to get that individual to think properly. you maybe have to. He's saying it's not my fault. He's saying the accusation is I aided and abetted a fugitive. I thought he was your trusted advisor, and I didn't even talk to God in his behalf. And I didn't know anything about this. So I'm not to blame for helping David. All true. Shaul is not willing to believe him. I don't think Achimelech is held accountable for not apologizing. But it does seem to be that the better approach is when you're accused is to start with, I'm so sorry that this happened this way. Please allow me to explain why it happened. Some type of I understand where you are in terms of making an accusation. Again, do you have to do that? You don't necessarily have to do that, but if you're trying to get out of this in an okay position, you might have to extend yourself. It doesn't seem that Achimelech extended himself at all in saying that he's sorry. Pasuk Tes Zayin. Because now Shaul does not believe Achimelech, so what does he have on his hands? In Shaul's mind, again, it could very well be that it's irrational at this point. It could be. You're going to see that it is. In Shaul's mind, David is rebelling against the king. David wants to usurp and be the actual king. So anyone who helps David is rebelling against the king. If you're Morid B'Malchus, if you rebel against the king, the punishment is clear. The punishment is death. And so Shaul says in Pasuk Tes Zayin, Vayomer HaMelech, Shaul says, Mos Tamus Achimelech. Achimelech shall surely be put to death. Ata you v'chol beis avicha, your father's entire household. You're all in it. Could be an idea that if the Kohen Gadol was helping David, and all other Kohanim, it should have been all hands on deck to stop him from helping David. You other Kohanim should have overthrown your Kohen Gadol. You should have taken over Achimelech, and you should have gotten David. So he sentences the Kohen Gadol to death, which for Achimelech literally came out of nowhere. Again, going in his mind, he was just invited to the palace. He comes there. The king makes an accusation. He tries his defense. And the king lays down the verdict. Off with your head.
That's how they may have done it in those times. You know, you watch Game of Thrones. That's how they do it. You're wrong.
So
they don't let them explain.
So there is, there obviously is a hope that it's different. In the court of a Jewish king. That being said, it is true. If a person is Morid B'Malchus, the punishment is death. And that Morid B'Malchus, that case of rebelling against the king, does not have to be judged in the classical court of law with two witnesses and a warning and all of the rules and regulations of Beis Din. When you're in the court of the king, it works differently. But we would... This appears to be extremely, extremely harsh, and it's seen in a number of ways. Pasuk Yud Zayin, Vayomer Hamelech Leratzim Hanitzavim Alav. So the king said Leratzim to the foot soldiers who usually walk in front of they run in front of the chariots. That's why they're called Ratzim, because they're running. Hanitzavim Alav, who are gathered around him. Subu, giving a command, Subu, surround, Vamisu Kohane Hashem, and kill these Kohanim of Hashem. Kigam Yadam im David, because also their hands is with David. V'chiyadu kivoreachu, because they knew that David was running, that he was running. V'lo galu as azni, they didn't reveal it to my ear. That's the command. V'lo avu avde hamelech l'shloach as yadam l'fgo abokane Hashem. But none of the servants of the king, none of them wanted to actually send forth their hand to attack the Kohanim of Hashem. the our tradition has it that he turned to his generals, to Avner, to Amsa, and he said to them, take care of this order, and they refused. They refused the order of the king because they didn't think it was right. Which begs the question, why doesn't the king figure out a way to punish them? I mean, if the king, if you refuse the order of a king, that's the same, that's a similar form of treason and rebellion. That doesn't seem to happen, but the idea being is that the reason they were entitled not to listen to the king. If you think that a king is going against halacha, you don't have to listen to the king. The same way if you think a parent is going against halacha, you don't have to listen to the parent, right? I can't say it's for sure similar, but it just sounds similar to me. The pasuk says in the beginning of Parshas Kedoshim, Ish imo v'aviv tira'u, a person needs to fear their mother and their father. Eshabsosai tishmoru, and my Shabbos is you should keep. And the pasuk ends, I think, Ani Hashem. So it's a famous statement of Chazal that Rashi quotes. What does Kibud Av V'Em have to do with Shabbos? The answer is that if a parent, God forbid, ever commands their child to violate Shabbos, the child does not have to listen. That's not considered to be fearing or honoring one's parents, because both the child and the parent are commanded to listen to God. And God said, keep Shabbos. So a child is allowed to disobey their parents if the parent, God forbid, is asking them to violate halacha. To me, that sounds similar. The idea that if a king asks you to violate halacha, you don't have to listen. You don't have to listen to the king. The people standing there did not. They were not. Let's put it this way. We don't know for sure what they weren't convinced of. You look at the psukim. It could be they think that Achimelech's defense is a good defense, and therefore he doesn't deserve to be punished. That's option one. Option two is that they might think, you know what, his defense isn't such a good defense, but the punishment doesn't fit the crime. You want to, whatever other, offhand, whatever punishment you want to give to the Kohen Gadol, even if you want to, let's say, remove him from being Kohen Gadol and put someone else in his place, it's not death. It's you know, send them into exile. Any other punishment, maybe they would have gone for. Condemning the Kohen Gadol and all these other Kohanim to die? It makes no sense. And so the fact that every other servant there doesn't want to go through with it, that's clearly painting, that's a sign that this was quite horrific, that Shaul could demand such a thing. Pasuk Yud Ches. So now no one's listening to the command. So the king says to Doeg, Sov ata, you surround Ufaga b'kohanim, and you attack the Kohanim. Almost going along with the lines, if you were willing to say the testimony that they're guilty, then you should be the one to carry out the punishment because of their guilt. Vayisov Doeg ha'adomi, so Doeg surrounded them. Vayifkahu b'kohanim, and he attacked the Kohanim. Vayomas b'yomahu, and he killed on that day shmonim v'chamisha ish, 85 men. Nosei eifod bad. He killed 85 Kohanim. This attack against Nov, and unfortunately we're going to see that it gets worse, It's considered to be one of the most horrific events in Jewish history. And Doeg, for having carried out this crime, is listed in Maseches Sanhedrin as one of the four regular citizens to totally lose their portion in Olam Haba permanently. This act, this murderous act, was considered something that there was never any ability to come back from.
So he was just one person killing 80 people just standing around. And the servants weren't helping him. He was able just to kill 80 people. Nobody defended themselves. What?
He must have had a little army.
I don't know.
So there are a number of questions that I think you could ask. Those are some of them. Another question I have is, if everyone, if all the other servants were unwilling to carry out the order, isn't it basically just as equal if you're going to stand by and let someone else commit such a thing? Uh-huh. Meaning, granted, okay, you didn't want to be the one to do it, but you'll stand back and allow someone else to do it. Now, it could very well be that that wasn't an option. It could be every servant who didn't do it, for all you know, maybe Shaul kicked them out, said, get out of the room. And you're left with 85 Kohanim who are unarmed, 85 Kohanim who are not trained, and, you know, for all we know, Doeg was actually big, strong, tough, and had weapons. And there's no way out. Again, we don't... We know the Navi is telling us the facts, some of the facts. Could it be he was helped? It could be that after he got the command, he's willing to do it. So maybe he had henchmen, maybe he had people who were on his side who came in and helped him execute these 85 Kohanim.
And again, he was told by the king. I mean, you're not supposed to really go against the king, are you?
You're not allowed to go against the king, but in terms of Achimelech, his defense was, I didn't know that I was going against the king. When Achimelech helped out David, he helped him out very innocently. He didn't know he was doing something wrong.
No, Doeg. Why? He was told to do something.
So the same way the other ones didn't listen, you're supposed to not, if you think the king is wrong, you're supposed to stand up to the king. Again, not that the king is wrong in terms of, you know, if the king wants to build the palace here and you think he shouldn't, that's not, but if he's going against the Torah, and this is Ritzicha, this is murder, so you have to be willing to give up your life rather than commit murder. You have to be willing to tell the king, I'm not going to commit murder, you kill me.
It's easier to say I'm not doing it because the other servants said they weren't going to do it.
Right, we wouldn't even be the only one.
Yeah.
He wouldn't have even been the only one. Now, the most horrific part, you're like, how could it get worse?
Yeah.
Is Pasuk Yud Tes. V'yas Nov ira kohanim hikal lefi charev. They went back to the city of Nov and totally struck the city of Nov. Mi'ish v'yad isha mi'olol v'ad yonik. V'shor v'chamor v'sel lefi charev. Man, woman, and child, all animals were destroyed by the sword. It was like the entire city was destroyed. The entire city was held in Shaul's eyes. The entire city was held responsible for aiding and abetting David.
So you're assuming this was Shaul's command. It's not said here, but you're assuming it wasn't Doeg who just is like killing happy. Yeah.
Correct.
Okay. It's not. How do we know that? It doesn't seem so clear that someone commanded him to do it.
So Chazal make a connection, an unfortunate connection, with the command that Shaul had received in the past to destroy Amalek, and he didn't carry that. Remember, that was what, he didn't carry out to the fullest. So in that instance, he was supposed to be utterly destructive, and he didn't carry it out to the fullest. Here, he wasn't supposed to be utterly destructive, and unfortunately, it was carried out to the fullest. But this is a very, very hard, a very, very challenging episode to swallow. Pasuk Chaf, Vayimolit ben Echad l'Achimelech ben Achituv. There was one son of Achimelech, one son of the Kohen Gadol, was able to run away. Ushmo Evyasar, his name was Evyasar. Vayivrach Achri David, and he ran away after trying to find David, and he found him. Pasuk Chaf Aleph. Vayaged Evyasar leDavid. Evyasar told to David, "Ki harag Shaul as Kohani Hashem." That Shaul had massacred the priests of Hashem. It wasn't only that; the destruction of the city of Nov meant that the Mishkan couldn't be in. I mean, basically, the city of Nov was destroyed. They didn't destroy the actual Mishkan, but at that point, the Mishkan moved, Mishkan couldn't be in Nov was basically turned into a mass, you know, grave. And the Mishkan was moved. Chazal tells us the Mishkan was moved to its final, the last place it would be functioning. And it was moved to Givon. In Givon, it stood from this point until Shlomo set up the Beis HaMikdash and moved everything that was functioning in the Mishkan to Yerushalayim. So Evyasar is the lone survivor. And he comes and he tells David exactly what happened. And if there... I can't have the words come out of my mouth if there's a silver lining to the story, because you can't. But there's something that we see in David which I believe is very important. Pasuk of Beis. Vayomer David le'Avyasar. David said to Avyasar, right now everything's playing back in his mind, right? The people, the Kohanim and Achimelech and Nov were killed. I was just there, asking for food. Yadati, he says, I knew, Bayomahu kisham doeg ha'adomi. I knew that doeg was there, and I knew ki haged yagid l'shaul. I knew he was going to tell Shaul, and I still asked for the food. Anochi sabosi b'chol nefesh b'savicha. I am responsible for every single member of your father's household. And we know that David is not really to blame. But David, to a certain degree, takes responsibility. Taking responsibility is an extremely kingly action. Kings take responsibility. They take responsibility for the good things that they do, and they take responsibility for the bad things that they do. It was David's ancestor. It was Yehuda. It was Yehuda's taking responsibility that vaulted him to a position of leadership. Right? When the Pasuk says, I think we've quoted this before together, but after the brothers sell Yosef, which was Yehuda's idea, the Pasuk says, Vayered Yehuda me'esachav. Yehuda went down. On a literal level of interpretation, he left his brothers. He went down from wherever they lived and lived somewhere else. He went down in their eyes. They looked at him as a leader, and they saw how distraught their father was, and they said, Yehuda, how'd you do this to us? You should have convinced us to keep Yosef. When does Yehuda start coming back? It's in the episode with Tamar, with his daughter-in-law, who is about to be burned on the stake. And she says, you know, the one whose ring and walking stick this is, that's the one who impregnated me. And he realizes it's his. And in that moment, he could be quiet. He could let her be killed. No one will ever know that he made an error in judgment and was with a zona on the street corner. But he decided to take responsibility. He decided to do what was right. Taking responsibility, that's a king. That's when Yehuda begins to be more of a leadership. Right? When he goes, right? Who's the son that convinces Yaakov to allow Binyamin to go down to Mitzrayim? Reuven tried. And Reuven said so the Chazal explained, Reuven said this idea that if I don't bring Binyamin back, you can kill two of my sons. So what was Yaakov thinking? So then I'll be missing two sons and two grandsons. That's ridiculous. It was Yehuda who said, you know what, if I don't do this, I'll lose my portion in this world and the next. It was Yehuda who was willing to take the responsibility, and Yehuda convinced Yaakov to send Binyamin. And when Yosef accuses Binyamin, rightfully so, because the cup is found, it's Yehuda who steps up. Vayigashe love Yehuda. Yehuda takes responsibility. David is the great-great-grandson of Yehuda, and in this instance, he's taking responsibility. We mentioned the Medrash, the unfortunate Medrash, that when this Perek opened, and it said that David put his whole family with Moab while David was still in the fortress. The king of Moab left his family alive. But unfortunately, the Chazal tell us that the king of Moab killed out David's whole family, except for one brother was able to run away, which sounds very similar to an entire city being destroyed with one person surviving. So not only is David taking responsibility, to some degree, David's even, you know, somehow cosmically, again, it's hard for us to understand these things, but there's a punishment that comes David's way because of it. So David turns to Avyasar, he says, I'm responsible, and therefore, Pasachav Gimel, Shiva Iti, stay with me. Right, David already has a group of 400. You'll be 401. Altira, do not be afraid. Ki asher yivakeh says nafshi, yivakeh says nafshecha. The one who's trying to kill me also wants to kill you. Ki mishmeres ati imadi, you are safe with me. Meaning David is extending that level of responsibility and saying, I will take responsibility for your life. The same way I'm going to try to protect my own life and the men that are with me, I'll continue and I'll try to protect your life.
Was there nowhere else where Avyatar could have escaped to?
I mean, you think about it. Where is he safe?
All the Kohanim, every Kohanim was killed by Doeg?
No,
all of them
the Kohanim that came from the city of Nov.
So wouldn't he have gone to another city of Kohanim?
Maybe that's going to put them in danger. He's
considered part
David's
of
David's already in danger. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't know. We don't know. I don't think we ever find out. We don't know how old this Avyasar is.
I mean,
he calls him a. It says that he had a Ben Echad. You know, for all we know, it could have been a teenager. You know, he came up with the idea to go to David, so he goes to David. So obviously, this is a very hard parak to learn, and it's going to be. It won't be the last time that we make a reference to it. So God willing, next time we'll continue with Parak Chaf Gimel.